Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
First thing you need to know, Jeff Passan, if you're listening, is you are coming up later this hour. Curtis looking at an old rundown there, clearly. It is Jeff Passan, not Seth Kizer. Seth Kizer was yesterday in the program. You need to know Twin Peaks has you covered. The ultimate setup. You want to go check out the games? You go to Twin Peaks, right? Best TV setup around. Twin Peaks. Find wall-to-wall TVs made from scratch food and the signature 29-degree beer served by the best-in-class Twin Peaks girls. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views. Order online at TwinPeaksRestaurant.com right now. They'll be happy to bring that made-from-scratch menu right out to your car. You can take it home. And, of course, have a little patience. Seating capacity limited with all the different protocols that are in place, but they're adhering to all of them, and it is the best spot to watch you some Thursday night football tonight if you are so inclined. Next thing you need to know is Socktober. Your last chance, final chances today and tomorrow to take advantage of this. Basically giving away $1 million worth of socks, $1 million worth of Bombas socks, athletic socks, to folks that need it. Listen, throughout the month, Sharewaves, powered by Sports Radio 810 WHB and the Community Services League, are giving away these socks to local youth organizations. You can help us raise money to level the playing field for KC kids who lack the resources they need to get in the game. A donation of just $8.10 is going to get you two chances to win the grand prize, which is, that is a Legion of Zoom prize pack. It is it's awesome. It's got everything. Grand prize includes Tyreek Hill, a Sammy Watkins, and a Mecole Hardman signed jersey, Tyreek Hill and Hardman signed action shots, a Hardman signed football, Charlie Hustle Legion of Zoom gift basket, two entries for an $8.10 donation. If you give $250, you automatically win a signed Tyreek Hill jersey while supplies last. We've got weekly prizes that you can win as well, in addition to that grand prize. So please, if you would be so kind, we'd appreciate it. You can donate and learn more at sharewavesfoundation.org/Socktober. That's sharewavesfoundation.org/Socktober. Go there right now. Start you off with a little bit of Chiefs conversation from today. The Jets coming to town, Chiefs 19.5-point favorites. Could the Chiefs look past them? Chris Jones was asked this question by our very own Todd Lebo. If there's any danger of overlooking a team like the Jets.
It's a huge danger. If I'm correct, 2 years ago, we walked into New York Jets, and I think there was 1-8, 1-9. And we end up losing the game, and you can't take these games for granted. That's a very good football team. Sam Darnold, he doesn't get the credit, but he's a very, very good quarterback. And I think people tend to forget that because of their record, but they have guys out there, and they play really well. They've been in a lot of close games. You can't take those guys for granted. That's a hell of a football team.
That's kind. I actually think you can take him for granted. Chris Jones, always a fun guy to talk to. I asked him, he mentioned that Giants game is actually 2017. I asked him if Chris Jones remembered who the Giants defensive coordinator was in that game, and he referenced a cautionary tale, you know, talking about the danger of the Jets.
If I'm correct, it was Coach Spags.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if you remember.
Yeah, after they beat us, I figured we wouldn't get it and win a championship with him.
It worked out well. You were just talking about, you know, we used to hear you talk a lot about the offense, right? Like lobbying to get yourself in there, maybe a little quarterback, tight end, something like that. You still lobbying for that now with the years under your belt? You trying to get over on that side of the ball at all?
Listen, no disrespect to Dontari Poe, but, you know, if he was able to sneak a quarterback pass in a huge game, I'm sure somewhere down the line, and maybe 1 year, maybe this year, maybe 2 years down the road, I'm very patient. I'm going to get me a touchdown with the offense. I promise you that. I'm not stopping there. I need you guys to help me. Make sure you guys continue to promote it, because as the promotion gets noticed and focused towards the team, and Coach Reed might want to try some a little sneaky, you know, never know.
So do you think he's got something that they work on from time to time that's got him out on the offensive side of the field?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
Absolutely.
I think there's something there. There's a play, whether it's and I keep thinking it's going to be a pass too. Like he's going to line up in the wildcat, and he's going to take two steps forward and do the jump pass. That's the play I see. Or what?
Or he's talking it up and talking it up and talking it up. They're going to put him on the field. They're not going to throw it to him.
Well, that could be. Yeah, he's going to be
this
the decoy.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that. Yep. I can see that for sure. No doubt. Dave Tobe today, special teams coordinator, after they had a big special teams week, certainly with the Pringle return, downing a punt inside the one. Another missed extra point, which we'll get to here in a minute. But Tobe was asked if part of the strategy in putting Byron Pringle back there was to bait the Broncos, since it was his first time back there, to bait the Broncos into kicking to him.
When you're a kickoff team, or if you don't know anything about a guy, you know, there's that unknown. Like, sometimes you put a guy back there and they say, hey, let's see what this guy can do. Let's test him, you know, and sometimes that happens, you know, and that could have happened with Pringle. I'm sure, you know, we might not get kicks to us, maybe this game, maybe they try to kick a touchback with Pringle back there. But, you put a new guy back there, a team, sometimes they want to test you. And, you know, and sometimes that's what we do.
Remember, that's what he said as to why they kicked. They've got a guy, Todd Lebo asked him after the Ravens game. You know, you've got a guy like Bucker that can just kick it all the way out of the end zone. You know, what goes into the decision-making of whether or not you give a guy a chance to return it or you just blast it out of the back of the end zone? He said, well, Devin Duvernay was the guy who went for the touchdown mm-hmm. with the Ravens, the Texas kid. Yep. He said, well, you know, it's we had a new guy back there, and sometimes you want to test him. Like, does he know what he's doing? Does he secure the ball? Like, you know, we wanted to take a shot, and, you know, they got us. Same kind of thing. Like, hey, who's Pringle? It's not Mecole Hardman. Well, let's see if this guy's got anything. And they found out. Yep, he's got a little something. He's got a lot of something, as a matter of fact, and it was big. So I thought it was interesting to hear kind of what burnt them against the Ravens is maybe how they burnt the Broncos by sending a new guy back there. And he did talk like we're going to see more of Pringle back there. He talked about his being bigger than Mecole Hardman. He's more the prototype of what you want in a kick returner, a bigger, stronger guy to bring it out. And he said, you know, you see a big guy running at you in the cold, you don't really want to tackle him so much because you'd be amazed at how well that can work. And made, obviously, that great cut and was then off to the races. So Dave Tobe talking about Pringle, we should see more of him back there. Whether or not anybody kicks to him next time, we'll see. Also, the subject of the hold, right? Well, Andy Reid, I'd asked Dave Tobe before about the hold, and he kind of said, "No, it's all good with Bucker. There, you know, we're working on things." Andy Reid talked about it being little things and little angles and those guys, and they're working on it. He seemed to certainly be talking about the two of them. I asked Dave Tobe how difficult it is to, you know, what all the little nuances that go into holding on kicks.
Not enough credit goes to Tommy. I mean, Tommy is a rookie. I mean, he was in college last year. I mean, he comes in here and under stressful situations is able to, you know, catch the snap and get it down on the spot. And, you know, he's really, really doing a good job. I mean, yeah, is there a learning curve? Sure there is, you know, and we'll get better and better every game, but I don't see it as a big problem. You know, it's not why he missed a couple of extra points. That's not the issue. Now, it's something that we will get, you know, better and better at. And after a while, it'll become second nature, you know, that operation, they'll be sharing a brain pretty much, but they do a pretty good job already. You know, it's really remarkable, you know, how much they've come along and, you know, really pretty flawlessly right now to this point, knock wood.
Flawlessly? 5 missed extra points?
I don't think that's, yeah, that there's one word you can't use to describe the Chiefs' place-kicking situation. It's flawless.
Yeah, I do think the hold is part of the equation. I think either Andy Reid was tired of Butker taking all the heat for it and wanted to stick up for him or what. I mean, Reid was the guy who started talking about they and working together and all that kind of stuff. He's mm-hmm. the one that kind of put it out there. I don't think he does that without it being by design. So what would be the reason why he would put that out there? Because then here's Dave Tobe, like, nothing to see here.
Man. That's so tough to figure out. I don't think Andy Reid says, I'm with you. I don't think Reid says anything like that unless he has a reason to do that. He's a guy who generally keeps things close to the vest, and a lot of coaches will know, will kind of go through the media to say certain things in their locker room. Not that he has a fear of Tommy Townsend or anybody in the locker room, but it does seem like that was a pointed reference that he made. Reed, I'm talking about, and other than that, I don't know what else he would mean by it.
Yeah, I found that interesting. That's no conspiracy, but they just doesn't. We're not hearing the same thing from head coach and special teams coordinator about what's amiss here. And I, you know, the question was asked. Well, he seems to be fine on the field goals. What is it about the extra points? You know what I think that is? Coincidence. You're freaking lucky.
Yeah.
So get it right before you're missing the threes. Size. Yeah, that's. I don't think there's like, oh well, it's different on the extra point. He just doesn't give a crap. Like no. I think that they've just been lucky that it's happened. And he did say, look, that's not an easy kick anymore. You know, it's not a chip shot. And he's right on that standpoint. So you're gonna miss a couple here and there, right? That does make it different. But it's still for NFL kickers and for a guy as accomplished as Butker. They shouldn't be missing what they're missing. That's why I think there's more than just Butker that's a problem here.
And I don't think it's, you know, people say, well, it's concentration. I think Harrison Butker knows how long that kick is. I don't think he's walking up thinking he's, you know, got a chip shot here. I don't know that he's concentrating less on extra points and field goals. I just don't see that being the case.
I don't know how you know, I mean, the guy walks out on the field, he's got one thing to do. He's going to go do it. Like, it's not the 50th consecutive minute he's been out there and his mind wandered. It's the only thing he's got to do, for crying out loud. A couple of NFL notes for you. The Pats, Julian Edelman underwent a precautionary knee procedure this morning, expected to miss Sunday's game against the Bills. Gardner Minshew has multiple fractures and a strained ligament. It might be strange as well. I don't know, but it's definitely strained. Ligament in his right thumb, which is maybe being viewed as the culprit as to why he's really fallen off the last couple of weeks. Chargers guard Ryan Groy has tested positive for COVID-19. Giants offensive lineman Will Hernandez has also tested positive for COVID-19, so you can add them to the Texans, who had some issues yesterday. And, you know, we sit and watch. So far, so good. They've been able to keep things going. But let's hope that doesn't turn into 3 and 4 and 5 with each one of those teams, that they got it and they've done the social distancing necessary. And then finally, for Major League Baseball, Tony La Russa is a Hall of Fame manager, and he's an active manager. White Sox. 34 years ago, he was the White Sox manager. He's back as the White Sox manager. Like 70, how old is he? 78?
76.
76. 76 years old, and he is back managing.
Retired 9 years ago.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I look forward to seeing how this works. We'll ask Jeff Passan how it works next. The senior Major League Baseball insider for ESPN joins us here in the program. Don't forget, Twin Peaks has got you covered. You want to watch some Thursday night football? Twin Peaks, the best spot. 29-degree beers, made-from-scratch menu, the best setup for the TVs in the world-class Twin Peaks girls. It's all right there. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
The program with Soren Petro.
Certainly I'm not proud of it. But this is Locker Room Talk.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Husband, father, Elmo impersonator?
Yeah!
He wrote The Arm and is currently writing its follow-up, The Leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on the program.
Yes, we talked to Jeff Passan. The baseball season is in our rearview mirror. Of course, Jeff Passan, always brought to you by our friends at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. The Joe's app, that's the easiest way to get your order in. It's on my phone. Make sure you get it on your phone. You can also go to joeskc.com. The app has everything you need. Pick your time, and you are scooting over to Joe's to grab your great barbecue. The original 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, and 117th and Row. In fact, the app will even tell you which location's closest. Yes, it will do that for you. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Check it out right now on your app store on your phone. Jeff, welcome to the T-Mobile guest line. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Seren. How are you?
Doing very well. I got to admit, other than yourself, as I was watching World Series, now some people told me that Twitter was blowing up about it, and I guess maybe I'm old because I watch the TV and not just stare at Twitter, although I like Twitter. I use Twitter. I'm not anti-Twitter. But I know Fox didn't want to say boo about Justin Turner being on the field. They would not tackle the issue of him being out there, and I couldn't figure it out. And I was going back and forth between Fox and you guys because ESPN does a great job of stealing the post-game audience. You immediately go to whatever big game it was, whatever sport it is, and start doing a great job of wrapping up what's just happened. And I'm curious why, you know, this didn't become a bigger topic faster for a lot of media outlets.
I don't know the answer to that, because the second that Kevin Burkhardt announced on the Fox broadcast that Justin Turner had tested positive, I pretty much was spending the rest of my night trying to figure out what the hell happened. To me, it was everything. And it's weird because it was everything on a night that the Dodgers won a championship for the first time in 32 years, which is weird to say that something, you know, that frankly is not going to kill Justin Turner, probably not even going to hurt Justin Turner, is a bigger deal than an organization, a story, the Dodgers winning for the first time in 32 years. But what it ended up becoming was a story to me that was about America, right? And you've got groups of people who believe that the coronavirus and COVID-19 are extraordinarily problematic, and that we should do everything we can to look out for others and to wear masks and to distance and to respect fellow people and their opinions on the matter. And then you've got a group of people who think if you're wearing a mask, then it's a chin diaper. And that if you're distancing, then you're falling for a hoax. And that if you go out there into a group of people without a mask on, then it's okay. And we saw all of those things at one time on a baseball field after the World Series had just concluded. And to me, it was just such a fascinating scene of where we are as a country right now, encapsulated by baseball.
Let's see if anybody else ends up testing positive around the Dodgers. And I think that's what baseball's doing. And baseball doesn't ever just rush right in with a ruling. But I think there's going to be, and it's been debated by a lot of people, there's going to be fines and there's going to be suspensions. I ask you, what fines and suspensions do you think are coming?
I think there will be fines. I think any attempt at a suspension is just going to get overturned. There's nothing in the protocol that says specifically if you do something like Justin Turner did, you will get suspended. Further, there have been other breaks of protocol in the past by other players in other organizations, and there haven't been any suspensions for those. And in a system, Seren, where suspensions are levied on a basis of precedent, and you have no precedent for something like this, and you have no clear and obvious words about an exact situation like this, maybe they'll try and suspend him, but I think the union would fight that. And I think the union wouldn't have a bad case and would have a reasonably decent chance of getting a suspension, if not completely overturned, then certainly reduced.
I understand the no precedence and how that doesn't give them a guide to go on, but it also in some ways unshackles them and allows them to do whatever they want, because this is what will set the precedent. And the reason why I think there will be a suspension and fines is because they've got to set the precedent. They've got to come down hard on him, and I think they've got to get the Players Association on board with them when they do it, because in all likelihood they're going to start the 21 season in the same environment. You know, it does not look as though we will have a vaccine and everybody vaccinated and we'll all be at spring training normal style. It looks like there'll be no media there. It'll be all Zooms. that there's a decent chance that they open the season. I think they'll have fans, but it'll probably be socially distanced fans. And so they're going to need to keep guys healthy and on the field. And so from that standpoint, it's why I think that they've got to do something so that they don't start next year with every player just thinking, whatever, and having to lose all these games and all the revenue again.
I think that's reasonable. I may be off on this. I don't think that your argument honestly has any holes in it. I just think that in the end, MLB is going to ask itself, whatever suspension we give Justin Turner, is it going to hold up? And if it doesn't hold up, are we suddenly going to be producing a precedent where the suspension is so minuscule it's not even worth suspending people for it?
Right. Yeah,
I guess I look at it like it's almost like the threat of something is worse than what you know it will be. Like if you don't know what the suspension is going to be, then you may go and break protocol. But if you find out, let's say that they try and suspend Justin Turner for 10 games and that it gets overturned, or let's say it gets reduced to 2 games, and you say to yourself, for being a turd, I get only 2 games, I'm going to go out. Forget these protocols. It's almost like if you don't know what the protocols and the discipline are going to be, then that keeps you even more in line.
I see what you're saying. I think a lot of it's going to depend upon what kind of aftermath there is with the rest of the Dodgers.
Yeah, but what because, if they don't test the Dodgers?
true. Yeah, I suppose they can all just go home.
I don't think they're under any obligation to test. I think that if players want to get tested, Major League Baseball will provide those tests. But I don't think they have, at this point, any obligation to actually do the testing.
We're talking right now with our man Jeff Passan here in the program. Jeff, Blake Snell being lifted from the game. I get all the frustration, and you're in the get-it-right business, and if the move you make doesn't work, then you're going to get criticism, and that's why there's managers, and that's what's supposed to happen. So I don't have any problem with the criticism. I do have some frustrations with, like, in my opinion, the way I view it. If you – after the game, he said, no, it was not our plan, that he was definitely coming out when he sees the order a third time. Okay. So to me, I'm like, well, his dream scenario was game 6 of the 14 World Series, where Yordano Ventura started when the Royals scored a boatload of runs. And so you're like, okay, he's pitching free and easy. That's your dream scenario. But you know, the job of the manager is to work through every possible scenario beforehand so that when it comes up, it's not a quick, like, guys, what do we do? Right? You've already thought through it. And you've already decided what the best way to go. Like, one of the best examples I can think of is, you know, the Royals, again, back in 14 when they used Ventura as a reliever in the wild card game. And afterwards, they're like, we discussed this strategy, and he's the guy we were going to go to. And
yeah, and it
so
blew up on him.
It did, but they had discussed it. Well, you know, this is an organization that seemingly has pre-planned everything, forever. And then we go into the what is your back against the wall game in the World Series, and now we're going to fly by the seat of your pants? Like, that's the part. Like, there's math to go, listen, we didn't want to see him a third time. He really doesn't. I went back and looked. He doesn't actually see lineups a third time that often, even in his Cy Young year.
Correct.
They got him out a lot fairly early in the games.
Yep.
But you know, to just be like, no, it wasn't the plan. But to get to the game at that point and your decision is to go to a reliever that had been giving up a run on a regular basis, like, what? That's just, everyone's come to the conclusion Cash made the wrong decision. He did because they didn't win. But I actually think the logic on where he was going is just counter, it runs opposite to what the Rays do all the time.
Well, it doesn't in a way. And let me just give you one small example of why putting Nick Anderson in did not run counter to what the Rays had done. It was actually consistent. Brandon Lau at one point was, I believe, 6-for-56 in the postseason. And he was still hitting second in the Rays lineup. The Rays believe, excuse me, you are who you are. You are what you are. And that everybody will go through ups and downs. They will go through slumps. But in the end, your true talent will show. I think the same reason that they kept Brandon Lau in the two hole and watched him hit two home runs in game two of the World Series and win that game for the Rays was the same reason that they kept putting Nick Anderson in there in high leverage situations, even though he was giving up runs galore and even though he gave up the two runs that ended up losing the World Series.
And isn't that their fatal flaw? Isn't that why the A's and Rays never ultimately win? I'll make you the case, and I made it to you last time, that one of the reasons why the Rays were in the World Series is because the playoffs had much more mimicked regular season baseball with no off days, cram the games together. So the depth that they have ends up being, you know, more necessary as opposed to teams that might be just star-oriented, top-heavy when the day's off, bullpen guys. Like, you only need, you know, your top three or four bullpen guys when you have the days off and everything. They didn't have that early on, and so that played into their hand. But isn't that why the A's and Rays always end up petering out in the end?
I don't know, man. Would you say that losing game six of the World Series is petering out?
I would say that for 20 years – those two franchises, and certainly for 20 years with the A's, but at least 10 plus with the Rays, have been employing that strategy, and neither one has been able to win. And the A's can't even get near it. The Rays have gotten to the World Series twice, but again, I think this one is suspect in how they got there. I think if you played a normal postseason, they wouldn't have come out and represented the American League. But I think at some point, have to examine and say, why aren't we getting the final steps done?
Who would have represented the American League?
I think the Yankees would have had a better shot.
Based
on that they had to go the distance against the Yankees to begin with, and I think if you have off days, the Yankees would have had a better shot. Because I think the Yankees have better pieces up at the top.
Yeah, but they started Cole twice in that series. They would have started Cole twice in another series, right?
Well, I mean, no matter what, the Rays didn't win. Why haven't the A's and Rays won? I mean, we can legislate the other series at the end of the day, those two don't win.
This is going to be a very dissatisfactory answer for you, because baseball,
as most are, let's be honest,
because baseball is a crazy sport where things happen and. Sometimes the best team wins and sometimes it doesn't. Like, I know in what we do sometimes is we string together these random events and assign meaning to them based on a team's laundry or a team's name or a team's owner or a team's general manager. I don't look at the Barry Zito, Mark Mulder, Tim Hudson, Oakland A's as being anything like the present-day Oakland A's. Those A's were a starting pitching-oriented, steroided-up, like, bunch of hitters who mashed with Giambi and Miguel Tejada and were super impressive like that. These A's are completely different. And so, I don't know, to look and say that the A's don't win when these are two wildly different types of teams, it's kind of disingenuous. And I get why you say, because they're both run by Billy Beane?
They're both analytically driven, and that's what I'm saying is, like the decision to take Blake's...
Here you go. You opened up the door that I'm about to smash on your foot. You know who else is analytically driven?
Oh, they all are. You didn't let me finish.
No, but my point is, I'm so tired of analytics being the boogeyman here.
I like analytics. You know that. I'm not trying to villainize analytics.
I know, but I'm going after all the people who go, analytics. Analytics is a fancy word for information. If you don't like information, you're a moron. And further than that, the Los Angeles Dodgers the day before did exactly what Kevin Cash did. They pulled a starting pitcher who was in the midst of a good outing, maybe not a Blake Snell outing, but Clayton Kershaw was pitching pretty well. He got in his last two outs on two pitches in the sixth inning. And Dave Roberts got booed for taking him out, and Kershaw, the October goat forever, got a cheer in October, and all was well in the world there. But the reality is they took him out for a reason, and that reason is because the numbers said that they should. And the Dodgers are champions right now, not because of analytics, but because of a combination of analytics, of scouting, of player development, of all the things that the Tampa Bay Rays do as well. So to try and have the Rays be representative of some sort of analytical revolution that's failing while the Dodgers go and use the same thing run by the same person who for a decade ran the Rays, I'm not accusing you of doing this. There are just many other people out there who are placing forth this disingenuous argument, and I want to slam the door on them too.
So should Blake Snell have been pulled?
No.
Right? Me, that's what I agree. And if you were conscious of him, this is what I don't get. This is where I say I'll come back to my original point to where the Rays didn't do what the Rays always do, which was have the plan ready going in. If you thought under any circumstance you might see Mookie Betts a third time and want to pull him, why didn't you use your opener?
Well.
And the answer is, oh, well, it's Blake Snell, and we don't do that to Blake Snell. Okay, then you don't pull him when Mookie Betts comes up the third time.
Yeah, I think here's the thing. The Rays are privy to much better information than any of us have.
Actually, not true. I have
that
Curtis.
That is true.
I have Curtis.
fair point. The Rays are privy to better information than anybody but you has. And so they know what was going on with Blake Snell's pitches at that point, and maybe they saw something that was alarming. Maybe they saw something that had changed. Maybe they saw something that correlates strongly with past outings in which the same thing happened and he got knocked around afterwards. All this may be true. In my head, I believe I would have kept Blake Snell in there, but if I knew the information, I might have changed my mind.
Tony La Russa is going to manage the Chicago White Sox. Good idea or bad idea?
I'm not going to answer the question because I want to address something else. And I think I'm going to be writing about this tonight, and I'd like to talk it out with you because I think before I write stuff, if I can have a conversation with someone, it sometimes helps. It's really interesting to me that a few years ago, when Adam Jones called out baseball as a white man's game and it sent Tony La Russa on a rant about, you know, how baseball isn't a white man's game and how he got into Colin Kaepernick, like the whole thing was kind of a mess. It's just interesting to me to see now that a 76-year-old man who has been retired for 9 years from managing, he's been around, you know, he ran the Diamondbacks poorly for a few years, the special assistant with the Red Sox, special assistant with the Angels. So he's been around the game. But he's been gone for 9 years. And he gets given a job. Given a job. It was his to lose, and there was no way he was going to lose it because the White Sox didn't even talk with A.J. Hinch. Didn't even talk with Alex Cora. Didn't even talk with any of the good candidates out there. And to me, what Tony La Russa's hiring illustrated was that Adam Jones was right. The thing he said years ago, this thing that's believed throughout Major League Baseball, this idea that there is a class of privileged old white men who run the game. What has Tony La Russa done to warrant another shot on the bench? When has Tony La Russa shown any interest in this idea? And suddenly, a whit of it, and he gets hired? Because Jerry Reinsdorf has some regret from 35 years ago? I just think it's insulting to the people at the White Sox who have done such a good job of building this team that they would suddenly hand it over to somebody who is so antithetical to the vibe of that team. Like, that's what strikes me about it. I mean, the White Sox are an exciting team, and Tony La Russa is only concerned with excitement as long as it's sincere. And what is sincere? What is sincerity? He couldn't answer that. And it's just frustrating. You know, when Major League Baseball, a sport that has a dynamic group of young players, a multicultural group with the White Sox who are exciting and who are fun, and they go out and do this, it's a turd in the punch bowl.
Is Rick Hahn going to sit around for this? Because La Russa's not the kind of guy to just come in and be, oh, you want me to have this guy? Okay. I mean, he's going to come in and take over.
Let's put it this way. If you're Rick Hahn at this point, I don't know the answer to this. Do you wait him out? Or do you walk away from this team that you spent years building and finally saw come to fruition? It's hard. Yeah. I think I'd probably stay just because I care about this team and I want to see it through to the end. And, you know, maybe Tony La Russa will work here. Maybe he's got a magic touch and it's 76. He's plenty salient for this job and for the communication that it takes and for all of the different elements. That to me makes managing as hard, if not harder today than it's ever been. It's because you have to, when players won't play for a day, speak out on issues of racial injustice and do that intelligently. And it's because there are analytics departments that are going to tell you what the right thing to do is. And you have a choice. Do I humble myself and look at this? Or do I say I've been around baseball a lot longer than you. I know what I'm talking about, and you can go kiss off.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all things. And I have plenty of anecdotes that lead me to believe that him taking the humble teamwork route is not going to happen. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope he has changed, and I hope we see that. And I wish him and the White Sox the absolute best of luck.
Time for our final four with Jeff Passan, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have a strain, sprain, fracture, or sport-related concussion, the University of Kansas Health System has a Saturday morning walk-in clinic at I-435 in Knoll. See a sports medicine physician without an appointment Saturday mornings through November 21st. For more info, go to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. The 2021 World Series will be who?
You can't do that before.
Sure, I can. Who be two? Come on. Be bold, daring. Let's hear it.
Let's get back to that one. Go to the next one. I got it. Nobody's been dumb enough to ask me that so far.
So you need to give
me a little while to think about it.
No. That's brilliant.
Wait, you're asking for like a snap thought right now? Okay. Dodgers and Yankees. Dodgers beat the Yankees. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, that's terrible.
It's a crap question.
No, it's a terrible answer. It's a great question. You just did nothing with it. Big difference.
You're asking me a question before I know who's traded where, who signs where. That's a question you ask in February.
You're the senior Major League Baseball insider for ESPN. You should already know who's going to get traded where, who's going to sign where. That's what you do. You break every freaking story. You already know who's going where.
Next.
Okay. Jets plus 19.5 at the Chiefs. Who do you have?
I'll take the Chiefs, actually.
Okay. Chiefs is going to lead the points.
And hold on. By the way, we nailed it. Are you going to give me a gambling question every week? I feel like you got to start keeping track of this.
You did have Syracuse in the 46, and that came home and easy.
It was. That was cake.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the best Halloween candy?
Oh, man. There's so many good ones. I love Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I'm pretty open-minded. Like, a sneaky one I love is Banana Laffy Taffy.
No.
No? As in not good or never had it?
I'm assuming both.
Okay.
Yeah, Both. They suck. Jed says they suck.
Yeah, Jed clearly has a trash palate. all right, next.
All right, favorite costume you've ever worn, be it as an adult or a kid. Your best Halloween costume was what?
My now 8-year-old son, because I spend most of October out of town, gets to choose my costume every year. And last year I came home and I said, what am I going to be for Halloween? And he said, Princess Zelda. So I put on a blonde wig. I put on a purple dress. He was Link. I was Zelda. And we were the dynamic duo walking around Prairie Village like the rock stars that we are.
That's emotional. Is what that is. That is impressive.
I think. Well, let me tell you what the moral of the story is. My children hate me.
That's not true. Hey, you deliver the goods. Whatever you want, I'll wear it. And he put you to the test, and you passed it. Congratulations. I'm impressed. Jeff, great stuff. It's been a short baseball season, but it's been a lot of fun talking. I know we'll talk during the offseason some as well. But thanks so much for all the great insights, and look forward to talking to you here as soon as we can.
All right, brother. Take care. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Jeff Passan from ESPN. He's brought to you by our good friends at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. If you want great dinner, you can get it right now. Dial it up on the app. Find the time. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Find them online at joeskc.com. We break. We come back. We wrap up with the kicker.
The program with Soren Petro.
I pee my pants.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. Who was the starting quarterback the last time an 0-7 team won a road game at Arrowhead? It was.
I don't know.
Matt Moore of the Miami Dolphins in 2011. He was starting the game because Chad Henne had just blown out his shoulder.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
That's fantastic. I love that. Good Sense, what we were playing for. You can order some Good Sense with their app. It's a great app. Save your favorites on there. You can do that on the website as well, goodsensesubs.com. Had a little Good Sense for lunch. Took some over to my in-laws today, thanks to the folks at Good Sense over there at 107th and Row, as they have my order ready to go right on time. GoodSenseSubs.com. Listen, for the kicker, how about this? A little reason the Jets come in at 0-7. Part of the reason they came in at 0-7 was because they took Jamal Adams, good safety, at number 6 in the 2017 draft. Patrick Mahomes would go number 10. They didn't seem to think they needed a quarterback at that time. I'm not sure why, because the next year they sure did. And at number 3, they took Sam Darnold, who has 3 touchdowns and 6 interceptions this year with an offensive-minded head coach. So, think about this. Had the New York Jets had the foresight or the ability to assess the talents of Patrick Mahomes and taken him with the 6th pick in the 2017 draft, they could have come back and then had their pick of Denzel Ward, Quentin Nelson. Getting the quarterback right, it's virtually everything in the National Football League, and the Jets can't do it.